Hi, ladies, and welcome to the Story Night podcast. I'm Jessica Campbell, and stories are my passion. It's my honor to host this podcast where real women share real stories of real hope. Each episode features one woman sharing her personal story with you. Too often, we fall into the traps of comparison and judgment, but what if we took the time to hear each other's real stories? Let's remember that we all have a story, and our stories matter. We're so glad you've joined us on this podcast journey. May you find hope and encouragement in this episode's story. Hi, ladies, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Story Night podcast. If this is your first time with us, welcome. We're so glad you're here. We recommend checking out episode one so you can hear all about the history and vision and purpose of Story Night and just get some idea of what this outreach is all about. If you've been listening for a long time, hopefully you've been enjoying the stories and finding encouragement and hope. You know they're all so different. We've got ladies with all types of stories. Some are very lighthearted and some are very heavy, and everything in between. My guest for this episode is Holly, and as you're finding a pattern here with several of our episodes, so many of the ladies on here thus far are connected with the McMinnville Chamber of Commerce, and you are one of the faces of the Chamber of Commerce, and you have a fun introduction every time we meet on a Friday morning, too. Maybe we'll get you to do that. But before we dive into your story, Holly, would you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, Holly Gleason. I work for the Chamber, enjoy people, which is why I love this job. I'm married. I have a grown son that's 36. I don't know when that happened, but my stepdaughter is going to be 21 this year. And that's another, wow, time flew. You know, we live out in Sheridan. My folks bought a hardware store here in 1985, and that's what brought us out here. And, you know, we've been here ever since.
Yeah. And for anyone who's unfamiliar with the Chamber of Commerce or a very fun and special Friday morning gathering called Greeters, everybody who comes gets to go around with a microphone and introduce themselves, right? And you've just heard this sweet, calm voice of Holly, but she can get the volume going with your introduction because you always yell out
McMinnville.org. People yell out at me while I'm walking down the street. They'll roll down their windows and yell that at me.
Because you are really running McMinnville.org.
Oh, good night. No. I'm just the membership director. Oh. It's a team of three. And I do more of the stuff for Greeters than Rhonda or John. John is, you know, definitely doing a lot behind the scenes, advocating for businesses and you know, just making the wheels turn. And Rhonda is awesome with her, you know, her outreach. She does all of the social media. She's just really great with her details. You know, she can pull things together at events. She does a lot of other stuff, those things that happen that nobody knows about that seem seamless. You know, she's just really good at that stuff.
Well, I hope one day we'll get Rhonda on here for her story. And I know this is a podcast just for ladies to share their story, but if we were to ever make an exception, it would probably be for John Olson. So thank you, Chamber team. We love what you do for our McMinnville community. Now, we want to find out how you got to this part of your life, but as always, we're going to rewind the tape. We're going to start at the beginning. So Holly, where were you born and what was your childhood like?
Oh, well, I came from Anaconda, Montana. Born and raised there. So go Copperheads. We lived outside of town, so had many pleasant hours looking for rocks, finding wildflowers, wandering around. Mm-hmm. It was back in the day when you could go away from your house and not worry about your kids getting abducted, really, you know. Right. Plus, I always had the dog with me. But, you know, I could name any wildflower that was anywhere within a mile of my house. I knew where they were. I could find them. I loved that. Would do that for hours and hours. And we lived next to a creek and we picked gooseberries. I mean, it was just a lot of fun. My mom jokes about us turning over rocks and taking the little slugs underneath and putting them in our pockets and leaving them there. And she'd go to wash our clothes and there'd be all this slime and, you know, just gross stuff like that.
But that still happens today. My four-year-old does that all the time. He'll reach into his pocket and it's like, here, mom. And it's all these live worms that he finds under rocks.
Yeah, we did that. It's a thing.
It is a thing, but it's beautiful though, because I imagine other moms might feel the same way, that there's just something so pure and wholesome about that kind of childhood. And that's the kind of childhood we want for our kids more than sitting on screens. Like, I
Oh,
want them
exactly.
outside.
Out
I
by
want them in
playing.
nature. I want them
Yes.
playing in the dirt and all of
Yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So
Oh,
it
yeah.
sounds like you had
Oh,
kind of
we
that
had.
idyllic.
It was nice. And, like I said, living 5 miles out of town, some of the trouble that kids couldn't normally get into being in town, and how you can get together with a group of people and do some thing that maybe you shouldn't be,
Oh, yeah.
was not much of a temptation, because it was pretty much my brother and I, and we're only 9 months and 5 days apart. So we were more like twins.
9 months and
Yeah.
5 days.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I know so many people that have kids close in age, but that's
Well,
about as close as you can possibly
he
get.
was 2 months premature,
Okay.
but still, that's still pretty close. Yeah, he was
2 months
very premature.
premature.
He was 3 pounds 11 ounces. My dad said he could hold him in his hand, and they put tubes in him, and I
Yeah.
guess he pulled him out. And the doctor says, "Well, if he lives through the night, he's probably going to be good." And, he's.
And now.
He works over at the school district in Sheridan, so he's still in the area. All of our children were born here, which seems odd because everybody else is from Montana. When I
Right.
think of home, I think Anaconda. And so went to high school, and of course in Anaconda, I did have a year of college. Oh, when I was 16, I started dating a man that was 2 years older than I am. A man, kid, we were kids. And my folks weren't thrilled, of course. He was out of school and I wasn't. And that was not what they wanted. But being as headstrong as I am, I went full bore that direction. And so by the time I graduated, we were going to be married. In my mind, I wanted what my mom and dad had, this place together out in Anaconda, this happy little marriage, all this stuff. So that's what I wanted. And I kind of wish somebody would have. Couldn't have been my parents, but somebody would have said, if you want to finish college, it might be a good idea. And he'll wait. If this is what it's supposed to be, he'll wait. And oh, believe me, there were red flags along the way, and I was going to plow through it. This was going to work.
That's an
This.
interesting point you make, though, that most of us won't hear that from our own parents, but we might hear it from somebody else. And so, for those of you listening, you might be that somebody else
Exactly.
in somebody's life. And if you're recognizing red flags, it may be worth trying to just plant a seed or ask a couple questions, because I cannot tell you how many women I sit with who had the red flags. And they either didn't recognize them or nobody tried to show them the red flags. I mean, certainly there are plenty of stories where every single loved one could tell you, don't do this, and you're going to do it anyway,
Oh,
right?
yeah. Oh, yeah.
But maybe there are some that might listen to
Yeah.
that special somebody.
Well, and I may have even listened to my grandmother. I don't know. I might have, but I couldn't hear my mom and dad because you can't tell me no. I really reacted badly to no. You could talk to me. That's another thing, but tell me no. Oh, goodness. I was going to go around it, headstrong, firstborn, which I think is kind of one of those personality traits that we tend to take on. So I decided I'm going to go to college. I was there a year, and I'm coming home this summer. We're getting married.
About 19, or were you
I was
18?
18.
18.
Yeah,
Okay,
I'm
okay.
sure my mom or dad were thrilled. But as again, you weren't going to stop me. And by that point, they'd kind of given up on trying to stop me,
Right.
And all of my good friends from college, they came, and we had a great small, because when I was a junior, the Anaconda Company was bought by ARCO. And they closed the smelter, which everybody was just devastated. Everybody knew jobs were going away. Everybody was just panicking. And
And for anyone listening who maybe has never heard the word smelter,
oh, okay, yeah. In Anaconda and Butte, copper was mined. The Copper Kings. If you ever want to read some interesting history in Montana, the Copper Kings and their fight and all that kind of stuff that went on. But Marcus Daly, being one of the Copper Kings, wanted Anaconda even to be the capital of the state. And there was a big fight about that, which he lost. So they opened pit mined in Butte. And then they would take the ore and they would ship it to Anaconda, and there was a stack, a big smokestack, and they would take that ore and break it down and heat it and, refine it, take the impurities off. It's refined until it's pure copper. And then they would ship that out. Actually, one of the elements that come off when they're refining sometimes is even silver, because there's a lot of silver in that area too. In
Interesting.
fact, a lot of places are reopening some of the old mines and going back in for the silver. But anyway, so they smelted the copper, and that's where everybody worked. That was the
The
company.
heartbeat of
Yeah,
the
the
town.
company did everything. They built the park, they built the baseball field. It was a company town. The housing on one end of town, which they called Goose Town, yeah, was all company housing. They called it Goose Town because some of the bars would have these games, and you could win geese. And so at that end of town, in the backyard, a lot of these houses were being these geese that were coming from the bar, and they'd be honking and stuff, and they just called it Goose Town, which I thought was a kind of a funny little thing.
Love
But
it. I love the picture you're painting, though, because for anybody who's born and raised in a different part of the country or, a big city or something, that what you're describing is pretty unknown to several ladies who might be tuning in, like that lifestyle and that childhood. So it definitely like kind of gives that picture of what it was like in Montana. And so at this point, you're 18, just got married. There are red flags, but no one's going to tell you no. And things are really changing in the town.
Yes. Yeah. So came back, got married. We rented a little apartment, had a couple cats. Things are bumping along pretty well. He's working at during the shutdown. He's part of security because my dad had been up there and he was the fire chief. They actually took him from that position, offered him a place to work at the Kuparuk operations in Alaska. So he went up there to be the fire chief, and Terry was working shutdown. And of course, when you say shutdown, that means there's a limited amount of time. So when he actually lost his job, it's like, now what are we going to do? Here we are in Anaconda. I'm working at a place called Snapshot Photo, 24 hour turnaround photo lab, which they don't do anymore. One of those things that went away. We didn't know what we were going to do, really, just barely scraping it, really. And dad had always wanted a hardware store, so he started looking for a hardware store, found this one in Sheridan that could make enough to support four people. So that's how we actually ended up
So then
in
your dad
Sheridan.
gets the hardware store in Sheridan, Oregon, and then your dad, your mom, you, and your husband Terry all move to
Yep, we're
Sheridan.
all out here at
Okay.
that point. Before that, there had been a time that I had taken some college courses and, another one of those red flags, but after the fact kind of thing. And came home and the house was cold. He hadn't had any dinner. This was kind of an ongoing pattern. He'd go out and drink a lot and I'd get mad and start looking for him and all these things. And you just get frustrated. And I packed a few things, grabbed the car, and went to Missoula to my girlfriend's house. I was just mad. And when I left Missoula that next afternoon, Paula says, "Well, what are you going to do?" And I said, "Oh, I know he's not going to be there when I get home." And I was right. He took everything out of the house. I mean, like everything. Furniture was gone, microwave was gone, dishes were gone. I'm not there very long, and pretty soon he comes and gets the car, and I'm like, "Well, hey, wait, wait, wait. Some of that stuff I need some of it back. It's not
All
all
yours,
yours.
yeah.
Some of that stuff was gifts, some of it." But my mom and dad were coming down for a visit 3 days later, and I was sitting on the floor in the living room when my dad walked in, and I just know he wanted to just take him apart limb by limb. And so he went down and bought me a love seat and a chair, and my grandpa brought over a table, and I had this ratty old TV, and that was pretty tough.
And how long had you been married at that point when he emptied the house and
Oh,
took
let's see,
off?
we got married in 82. It's probably a couple years.
And this is all still while you're in
And yeah,
Montana.
still in Montana before we moved out here. Dad wanted me to leave right then and back to Alaska with him. And I was like, no, I gotta see if I can make this work. I wasn't one to give up necessarily. And he was seeing somebody. I could never actually prove it, but I was pretty sure, just by things. It's not that big a town. So we did reconcile, got back together. My grandpa died. That was pretty traumatic. So that was another one of those tough things, And the year we got married, my grandma, she had passed away. She had cancer. And I remember thinking, you knew people died. It wasn't like, you're old enough, you know that. But I didn't expect the next day that everything would be normal. It should have been different. It's different for me. It should have been for everybody. So those were kind of tougher things. But anyway, we ended up back out here and we're at the store and things are going along well. We're getting along well. We get farm home. We get this little house. We never ever thought we'd get a house of our own. So that was kind of exciting and so in love with him at that point. Everything was going well, And I think, yeah, we could have a baby. I end up getting pregnant and he ends up getting a job out of the prison. Our income's going to be better. We're going to have these great benefits. Again, things are going really well. I'm working at the store. I'm bringing Nathan with me, and we're talking, and I'm thinking, I really want to be home with him. And so we decided, yeah, that I'd quit my job, and he was going to support the family, and I was going to do that. So I was really excited that I just quit working down at the store and was going to be home with Nathan. And he goes off to a sort team competition because he was on sort up at the prison. And what that is a special response team for like riot, special operations riot team, I think is what they call it. And they do all this training. The federal prison, they, as part of the training, bring them together and have this competition. And so he'd gone off for that and talked to him while he was gone. He came home and he was just acting funny. But when somebody's gone and they come home, you are happy to see each other. And the next day he's thinking, yeah, I don't want to be here. And I'm like, yeah, what? Nathan had just turned 3, and I said, are you kidding? And I said, I'm just gonna go next door for a little while. So I went over to our friends next door, took Nathan with me, and when I got back, he was gone. I didn't know where he was for 3 days. I had no idea, no contact, nothing. I mean, no phone call, nothing. Then the LA riots started, so the SWAT team got called down there, and while he's there, I get this letter in the mail. It's addressed to Terry, and it is from this woman in, I think it was Arizona, it's where the competition had been at. Being the nosy person I am, I ripped it open, and she was, oh, don't toss me away like a dirty shirt, and I had a wonderful time, and blah blah blah. And so then I had a name and address. I called and left her a message and said, hey, I'm Terry's wife. I want to talk to you. And then she calls, and in my head, I had rehearsed all the nasty things I wanted to say, and that's not at all how the conversation went. I just, hey, I think you need to know he's married. We have a 3-year-old child. We've been married for 7 years. I said, yeah, we have problems, but I didn't realize it was like this. And you need to know. When he got back from the sort team competition, he came and got some more of his stuff, and my 3-year-old says, and you don't really realize what they do comprehend because you think of them as being very little and not really very wise. I was holding on my hip and he's walking out the door and he says, bye, Daddy, I'll miss you. And I'm like, how can you walk away when that's what your little boy's saying? So that just started. Now I've got to kind of figure out, now what do I do? I'm not working at the store. Mostly, I just wanted to be home with Nathan. So I started doing some childcare, and that didn't bring in a lot. Then I started doing house cleaning, and I had some really great friends from church that take Nathan, and they were homeschooling. So the amount of things that he learned was amazing. He was just soaking things in like a sponge. They lived on a farm, so he could go play with the sheep and the dogs and the cats and all the stuff they had up there. So he got to do that. It was just, I would say, probably fairly deep depression for a good 4 years, just because of that push pull, and I really, really, really wanted the core family. I wanted it back.
Yeah.
Probably allowed some things that I wouldn't normally have allowed for somebody to treat you, but
Right.
you want him, then becomes so bad.
You want him to be somebody he's not and
Yes. Yeah.
create this vision of what the family should look like. And I think a lot of women who have been through anything like that, especially a betrayal, that they can relate to. You keep wanting to reconcile, or you keep taking the person back, or keep trying because you're trying to reach this lifestyle, this family unit, or sometimes for the sake of the kids. But yeah, like you said, it just every time you might reconnect or get your hopes up, just to have that ripped off again starts the wound all over.
And he brought the gal from Arizona out here at one point, and I was not very happy when I figured that out. And I told him, I do not want my son anywhere around her. In fact, if you want to see Nathan, you're going to have to come here because he's not going there.
So at this
Things
point, you're
like
in
that.
your 20s, single mom, and trying to create a new life and raise Nathan.
It was nice to have the people around that I had. I had my mom and dad, who dad always wanted to make sure he had a car, bought me a car. And then it was like, let's make a deal. I'll buy the groceries, you cook, and mom and I'll be over for dinner every night. So then they were making sure we were eating and they were making sure we had all the stuff we needed. He was always good at making sure you had, as difficult as he could be, he was always making sure you had.
Had your basic needs
You had to
met.
have those. You had to have this stuff, and I was going to make sure you did. And I'd even turned off the cable because it's like, I can't afford cable. Can't afford TV. Didn't have any TV. He saw, I'm going to turn your cable because you could stand being there with nothing to watch while we were waiting for dinner or whatever. So he had to go in the
Make
TV
sure you have your food, car, and cable.
back. Cable, you're good. Yeah, I think you're covered now.
Now, at some point, you have a second marriage.
Nathan was in first grade or something, and Terry and I were seeing each other sort of on and off, not really seeing. He'd come by or he'd call. And finally I said, there's a guy that's coming around. He's kind of interested, and I don't want to pursue dating if there's anything at all that's ever going to happen between us. I don't and he says, yeah, go ahead. You go ahead and start dating. So I'm like, oh, okay. So Robert was coming into the store and we started seeing each other. He had three kids. His wife was an alcoholic, so there was some weirdness with all of that. They were not living together and hadn't been, but I don't believe the divorce was probably complete, and that was a mistake on my part. I should not have moved forward in a relationship that I didn't think was at least legally done. But anyway, we dated for, I guess, 2 years. My mom and dad liked him. It seemed like he had everything together and everything. He did at one point tell me, well, there was time when I smoked pot, and I said, well, everybody's done something in their past, not realizing that I think maybe that was his confession that that was what he did. So we got married, and I went from one child to four, and oh my gosh, I've never seen so much laundry in anyone. Maybe you didn't do 3 loads of laundry a day. You were buried. Gallon of milk and 2 loaves of bread every day. And Nathan and Shelley were 6 months apart in age, and Andy was a year younger, and then Sean was like 12 or 13. So there was a little bit of an age gap. Sean was not happy about this at all. Or Andy and Shelley, they just kind of integrated. Like Nathan and Shelley and Andy were, it was just easy because they were all the same age.
Younger.
I knew how to deal with kids that age because Nathan was that age. I mean, we took a lot of family trips. We did fun stuff like that. But pretty soon there was this gal that came to work there, and it just seemed odd. Sometimes you can't prove something, but you're pretty sure of it. You don't know why you're sure of it, but you are.
There's
And
some gut feeling.
there's just something, it's just wrong. Of course, whenever you'd bring up these things, well, you can't tell me I can't give a ride to work. What are you next? You're going to tell me I can't wear green shirts? I mean, just ridiculous sort of argument things, And so things just started getting weird. And then he took Sean on a trip to Cabo. I don't know, he was getting ready to go. And like I said, things were off. And he left, and I just had this overwhelming urge to go out in the boat and find out what was in the boat. And there was no reason to, not really.
Some
So
intuition there.
I went out there, and I found this enormous package of pot, which wasn't legal then. It is now, but wasn't then. I threw it in the garbage can. And,
How many years had you been married at this point?
well, let's see, probably close to five at that point. We argued, and what did you do with that? And you have no idea what you've done. And this is really bad. Things were just swirling. And Robert was very controlling in a lot of ways. And I remember talking with somebody, and she, about things were going. She said, Holly, that's wrong. Like, yeah, I do. I know that's wrong. I'm going to confront him when I get home, when he gets home. And when he get home, things would start. It's like being in the middle of a tornado, and you can't find the real way. I don't even know how to explain it, but I think if you talk to other people that have been around that sort of a person, they probably describe something very similar.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many women that have shared of just that power and control, that ability to manipulate conversations, the ability to gaslight other people where they can't think clearly, or they're not even sure if they're correct anymore. It just makes them feel
Exactly.
like they're crazy,
That
even though it's.
you're absolutely crazy, and why are you thinking like that? And I mean, I remember hearing about it before that and thinking that's, but after being in the middle of it, oh, it's a real thing. It is a real thing. And anyway, so all this stuff's going on, and I'm like doing weird things like putting the milk in the cupboard, and I mean, just I can't focus. And finally, I decide I can't lose my son, even though this had been my house that they moved into. I can't lose my son. And so I asked my dad, I said, if can I come and can I bring everybody? He says, you bring everybody. But I knew that if I brought the youngers, that I would probably be arrested for kidnapping. And so I took my son and I ran. I went to the school. I told him Nathan's to come home only with me, nobody else. At that point, you're believing a lot of things about yourself twice out like this. It's like, man, I have no value. I am unlovable. I'm a horrible parent. There's all those lies that you're believing about yourself, about every decision you've ever made. And yeah, I made some bad ones. Thank the Lord, we're not the sum of our mistakes, but exchanging that identity for what's real. I am loved. I am valued. Nathan and I have talked many times about some of this stuff, and he says, "Mom, I know I can count on you. I've always known I can count on you. You and Grandma and Grandpa." And we moved up with my mom and dad, and so my son got to see what that kind of a relationship's like and be around them. And he and my mother have a wonderful relationship. I mean, they're really close. She used to come get him even after I got remarried, just him, and they would have Grammy Day Wednesday afternoon after school. He'd go up, but when we moved up there, she turned from Grammy to the homework Nazi. Because I would be at work and he'd have to do homework. And so when Robert and I divorced,
And then he had your house.
he had my house, and I remember thinking, oh Lord, what am I going to do? My sister-in-law told me, hey, there's a job opening at the CTGR Trucking. And I'm like, oh, she says, you should go apply. So I applied and I went in, but I told him I didn't have any idea how to work computers. I really didn't. They hired me anyway. And I remember thinking, okay, Lord, we're in for the long haul. And then they closed down the truck shop. Again, there, here I am without a job again. And I started working up at the school at the after school program, and that was a lot of fun. And one of Nathan's good friends, his mom was a partner in, I guess, Online Northwest. And they had an office in the News Register building. And she was good friends with Jeb. And there was this job coming. She says, come in, I'll get you an interview. Like dandy. So then I interviewed for the dummy clerk, which was a fun title to own because people like, you're a what? It's kind of one of those shock value things. It's just kind of fun, And so I was a dummy clerk for 2 or 3 years. And that a dummy clerk, actually, all they do is they take the paper and put the ads in the right places. And, page four was always obits page. And you had to make sure different ads didn't go on that page because it was maybe inappropriate. And this ad needs to go on the sports section. And there's a formula of how much editorial space to ad space you use. And so you had to get the dummy that together, send it off to the editorial side, and then they flow in the news and stuff. And then it goes to production and to print and all that stuff. So it was kind of a fun thing to do for a while. And then I run a paper ad sales position came open, and I talked to the marketing director, and he says, well, I don't know, but we'll give you a try. I did really well. Did really well selling run of paper ads. And then the wine press, they bought the wine press, and the lady that had owned that, she was doing sales, but she was backing out. And I'm like, hey, I hear that they're going to have a sales position open there, and I'd really like to have it. So then I went in and sold that for several years. I worked at the News Register probably all told, I think about 12 years. And then Rhonda at the chamber, she worked at Online Northwest and then came over and took the dummy position when I went to run a paper sales or ad sales. And then when I went moved from there to the wine press, she took that job. And then eventually she ended up co-selling with me for the wine press. And then
So the two of you have really kind of
she
been.
went to the chamber and then I went to the chamber. So we've followed each other around for quite a while. We're a lot more like sisters and, So yeah, that's how I ended up at the chamber, and
Chamber.
have figured out that I really enjoy helping people. That gives me that's kind of my food, I guess. It just fills me up. I enjoy that. So if I can connect people or help them with their business or, help them with their ad copy or whatever it is I can help with, I really enjoy that.
And at the beginning of this episode, you did mention you were married.
Yes.
So there is a happy,
Yes.
not ending because your story is still going,
Still
but
going.
a happy chapter here.
Yeah. Well, Steve and I started dating when Cora was probably about six, his daughter, and she's going to be 21. So Steve and I started dating, and we've had a lot of fun, have gotten to be involved with Cora's life. She's a wonderful young woman. She's very self-confident and capable. She's one of those kids that when they go to work somewhere, they just kind of rise to the top. She was valedictorian. She's just one of those kind of kids. And she's now working out at the tribe with the little kids, K through three. And my son, Nathan, I always felt really guilty because I didn't get to give him the life I wanted to. But he works for Hunter Communications. He climbs towers. He programs things. I don't even understand half of what he does because it's a very techie stuff. He also runs his own business and putting in security cameras, and he's just very charming and self-confident. So, they both turned out really, they're wonderful people. And, Steve's a mechanic. He's so smart. He always says he's not, but he's so smart. He can weld, he can fabricate, he can paint, he restores, he wrenches, he works on tractors. He's had like a D8 cat, but he also works on Jaguars. I mean, and anything in between. So he's very capable with that. He knows how to do carpentry work. He's got so many talents. He was a millwright out at Wellmine Lumber for a number of years, and they work on millwrights. They're an amazing group of people. You can't believe some of the stuff that they do. But anyway, so.
And so how long have you been married now to Steve?
Well, we got married in 2015. And so this is our
This is
tenth.
your 10th anniversary.
10th anniversary.
Happy 10
Oh,
years.
thanks. So he says, you're a mean woman. You took away my independence on Independence Day because I got married on 4th of July. I told people we're coming. Yeah, it's a barbecue. There's just going to be a ceremony in the middle. It's, pretty low key.
I've heard sort of two themes running through your story, and one is your story as the wife who was devalued and then a wife who was valued, right? And then the thread of motherhood, of being a mom, being a stepmom, and wanting to create a life for your child, and then to see where he is now. And I know there are women listening who would relate with one or both of those, truly. And so I wanted to ask first, what kind of encouragement there might be for women who maybe they were with the man or still are the one that's been abusive in some way or narcissistic in some way that had all the red flags, like, but then you did eventually land with somebody that had all the green flags, right?
Yeah.
Not that anyone's ever going to be perfect,
No.
but how did you recognize that difference and really be able to tell women like there are men out there like that and that new marriage can be available for them too.
I think in your own mind, one knowing what you want, I've heard people doing this, is just to make a list of the characters that you want in somebody that you want to be with. Do you want somebody that's dependable, and what are those things? I think in my head I knew what I was looking for, and really, to be honest, there's a lot of the things that Steve is that maybe are a little reflective of my dad. Not all, because like I said, dad could be difficult, but still those characteristics of he's a little bit of a gearhead. He likes to work with cars. He values going to work. Steve really wants to row the boat in the same direction. And you should think about, can you share with them? Can you have a conversation? Can you do this without being frustrated? And I think on this end of my life, Steve, he says, oh, we should have got together then. And I looked at him, I says, you wouldn't have liked me then. I'm not that girl anymore. I tried really hard to make things be like I thought that they should be. And I'm sure in a lot of ways that was really frustrating to Terry because I was so concerned about having things look this way and it needed to be this way. And I was always concerned about how my dad would view it. I found that when my dad passed, that a lot of my identity came from there and my anchor was gone. That was hard, but we're not our parents. We're our own people. You need to take responsibility for your decisions, a lot of bad ones, as I've made, but you need to be able to draw on those good things and find that in the other person.
It seems like you've done that.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's
Yeah.
pretty solid. I depend on him.
And I'm so happy that you got that because, as you mentioned earlier, there were lies that you were believing, and there are lies a lot of women believe about themselves, that they aren't worthy, or that they're not lovable, or that they're not valued, or that they don't deserve more.
Yes.
And you do. It's such a joy to see women find their worth and know that they matter, that they do deserve to be treated well.
Yeah. Something my grandma told me one time, and it's kind of harsh. And I remember recoiling when she told me, she says, Holly, part of the way you're treated is part of your own fault. Because if you allow it, then it's the way they're going to treat you. It's okay to want to be treated better. I've told Cora this many times. You have three choices. You can accept it as it is, you can ask for change, or you can walk away. Those are your three choices.
For most anything. I mean,
Yes.
this reminds me of the serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. It
Yeah.
sounds very similar.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that you walk away from a marriage. I'm just saying sometimes it's okay to ask for something
To
to
change,
change.
absolutely. Yeah. And I wanted to circle back to the women who need to hear a little encouragement as mothers. Because I know there are women that have that same feeling. For whatever reason, they didn't give their child or children everything that they wanted, or they somehow feel like they failed as a mother, or that they didn't do enough, or that, you know what, again, some of those lies that come in,
Yeah,
right?
that's true.
If you can speak to some of those women too, and
Well, I guess if you think about it, whose definition is enough, right? You have an idea of maybe what you wanted and it maybe didn't turn out the way you wanted. That doesn't mean it wasn't right. And really all we have as any human being in any situation is to do the best we can. And then be big enough to say, if you need to, hey, I messed up. Please forgive me. You know, Nathan and I've had those conversations. And I know he's always been, yeah, Mom, it's okay. You know, I know you're there for me. There was a lot of time in there that I was emotionally unavailable. I was just so hurt. But he's okay. All you can do is your best. That's all you can do.
right.
And you can't beat yourself up for that.
No.
If you need to redeem your timeline, take it to the Lord. How does that go? Redeem the time the locusts have eaten? Yeah,
Yeah.
so.
I love your redemption story. I think it's an encouragement, and it's so nice to get to sit here and hear your story. Thank you for sharing it. Thank you for, the authenticity and for going through all the raw chapters of the past.
Yeah, you know, even at this point, you think you could get through it without tears, right? It doesn't always work that way.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's real life. And that's the heartbeat of Story Night, is that we get to be real with our stories, whether we're talking about a chapter that's decades old or we're talking about something that we're living through in the moment. Maybe even something that's looming in the future, right? I mean, there's all kinds of things. But the reason we do this is so that women are reminded that their stories matter and that they realize that they are not alone. The things that they're going through, somebody else has gone through also, right? And that there is hope in every story. There is encouragement to be had. We want to build those relationships. And ladies, for those of you listening who are new to this Story Night outreach, we do this podcast, but we also do live events, and we do four of them a year. Our summer one is coming up on Thursday, July 31st. Tickets sold out a long time ago. However, we have had a few cancellations due to last-minute vacation plans and such. So if you'd like to get your name on the wait list, there's a very, very good chance we'll be able to get you one of our free tickets. Email me at storynighthope@gmail.com to get your name on the wait list, and hopefully we'll be able to get you one of the tickets so you can join us and over 200 other women at Domaine Willamette Winery. We're going to be outside for this particular story night, and Caitlin Sticca will be sharing her inspirational story. She was pregnant when she found out she had breast cancer, and she is now a two-time breast cancer survivor and the founder of a local nonprofit called With Courage. She's a mentor to so many in the community, and you don't want to miss her story and just a chance to come be with a whole bunch of other women in the community as well. Just build those relationships and have that special evening together. And if you are listening to this after July 31st, 2025, check out our website, storynighthope.com, because that will give you the most up-to-date information about the next upcoming live Story Night event. And you can get tickets there. Holly, thank you. Thank you for taking time to sit
Thanks.
here and share your story. It's so meaningful, and I appreciate you. And I appreciate all that you do for our community. We also want to thank State Representative Lucetta Elmer for providing the platform for Story Night so we can continue to bring you stories from women around the community and provide these live events for you. And thank you, ladies, for tuning in, for listening to the Story Night podcast. We hope you were encouraged, we hope you were blessed, and we hope you come back next time for our next story. Until then, remember, you have a story, and your story matters, and you are not alone.